Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello folks, you're all very welcome back to the Talk From The Terrace podcast on both Celtic Fanzine TV and on audio on the Celtic Soul podcast. So please hit that subscribe button so you'll never miss an episode. In this episode, I'm joined by former secretary of the Celtic Supporters Association, Eddie Tono. It's been a while, Eddie, since you've been in for a chat. You're very welcome back to the show, and another cup final to look forward to the weekend. Now, the last cup final we had you on before we had that quadruple treble win with penalties, a late show wasn't exactly good for the heart, but an empty stadium. But you just told me there offline before we come on that the game will go ahead, there'll be no restrictions, it will be a full stadium, because as we enter into these uncertain times again, it's great to know that my antigen test and my flight will not be a waste of money. So Eddie, you're very welcome back to the show.
No, it's nice to be back. It must be a year. This time last year, we were anticipating the Scottish Cup, so we've now got the League Cup final this season. A Cup final every December would be nice. It's a nice warm-up for Christmas.
And the big question on everyone's lips who would have tuned into that show, Eddie, do you buy a new short for the League Cup final?
Well, I don't. The Scottish Cup final only. League Cup final, you're just not too sure because... Yeah, the weather could be a bit inclement. We've been in the winter, it's always a bit colder. You can plan your outfit for the Scottish Cup final for a nice sunny day in May.
Yeah,
but the League Cup's a bit different.
Maybe you should get yourself a green duffel for Sunday.
Yeah. I'm sure I've got an old one in a wardrobe somewhere.
So, Eddie, do you think Ange can deliver that first trophy to us on Sunday?
Yeah, I'm hoping so. You know, obviously we're under a wee bit of pressure at the moment in terms of squad numbers and who's available to us and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see what the team's going to be. But I never take anything for granted, particularly around the League Cup, because, you know, it's a bit of a tournament I've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with, you know, since I remember in the early days of starting to go. My first League Cup final was in 1971 when we got hammered with Partick Thistle, you know, and that was a great, great Celtic team. And Partick Thistle slaughtered us 4-1. I think I'd been to three League Cup finals before. It was actually on the fourth where I actually seen us winning a game when we beat Hibs 6-3 and Dixie Dean's got a hat trick. The three previous to that, we were always strong favourites and lost all three. So I'm always a bit wary when it comes to League Cup final. It took us a long time, I think, to settle into the League Cup. The 1970s was not great for the League Cup final. So, yeah, I'm not taking anything for granted, but I'm hopeful.
I think, Eddie, but Brendan Rodgers, he delivered them league titles. He put an end to those, as I say, the old-timers when they were, the League Cup, you know, this, that, there's a spell on us. John Fallon always spoke about all those years about the League Cup, how it was the hardest for Celtic to win. But I think those, I think they're in the back of our mind now. You know,
well, I'm hoping so. Certainly in recent years, we've had a much better love in with the League Cup. You know, obviously we've had quite a bit of success in recent years, and that sort of, you know, coincided with the quadruple treble. So yeah, hopefully we'll buried the hoodoo that surrounded the League Cup final. But for me, it's still there, and that's why I'm always a bit wary getting into League Cup finals. I never take them for granted. So we've got to get there and earn it. But you know, we Alfie Ralston being in the form, is then anything's possible.
You mean Ralston Aldo?
That's the one.
Eddie, Paul Lambert was on the TV during the week on one of the Sky Sports programmes, and he was chatting about Ange, and he says he draws some similarities to when Wim Jansen came to the club, and obviously Wim won his first trophy was the League Cup as well, and then went on to on that glorious sunny day in Paradise when he stopped the 10 and we won the league. And What a night that was going down the Gallagher.
Absolutely.
But do you draw any comparisons, or has it been, you know, have you thought back to those Wim Jansen, that one Wim Jansen year, and what he came into and what Andrews had to come into, and the rebuild they both had to do, and both of them in League Cup finals and the chance for Andrews to...
I think that's a fair comparison. You know, obviously, you know, Wim came in at a time and... We started rebuilding to Wim came in, to be fair. You know, we had the Tommy Burns years and then we lost a few players, but I think we were getting towards a bit of stability on the park, you know, and Wim came in and sort of in the 98 season got us over the line. Obviously, the winning the League Cup at Ibrox that day was fantastic. And again, we hadn't, I don't think we'd won the League Cup for 15 years at that point, 15, 16 years prior to that. So there was a great sense of relief when Wim came in. So I'm not quite sure there was a comparison in that regard in terms of such a long, barren spell. We having no won a title for so long and no won the League Cup, won Scottish Cup in 95 and all that time. You know, we have had periods of, you know, massive periods of success in recent years, but clearly where the comparison is that Andrews came in and had to rebuild almost completely, starting off from scratch. The squad's unrecognisable for the squad that played in the Scottish Cup final at this time last season. My concern for Sunday is that, you know, just the injuries we have and, how we're going to line up. And, you know, we're getting over the line at the moment and we're just getting over the line in games. And it's great and it's admirable given, you know, the demands in the squad and the fact that we're missing so many key players. But I think if we can win on Sunday, it also, you know, might give us the boost that Wim's team got as well, you know. So I think there's a comparison there. You know, I think everybody would get a huge lift by Ange winning his first trophy. It'd be great winning one trophy when you roll in the door. Apparently, in this country, you're a genius if you win one trophy every 3 or 4 years if you're managing other clubs. But Ange's only been in the door 5 minutes and we're in our first final and we're looking good for it. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, injuries, but the captain's still there. Have you been impressed by Callum this season?
Captain's been immense, hasn't he? I mean, he's just never let us down. I'll tell you, the game that really stood out for me about how good Callum is was a couple of weeks ago at Tannadice, you know, sitting in the shed behind the goal there and just watching his movement and how he drives the team on, how he shuts other teams down, and absolutely fantastic. For me, he's been the player of the season so far. There's been other contenders, you know, obviously Jota's been a great addition, Kyogo's fantastic. Mentioned Anthony Ralston earlier on as well, been completely outstanding. But for me, the man of the season so far has been Callum McGregor, and he is the one bit of stability we've had through the more recent successful years. And he knows what it's like to go to Hampden, and he'll be hammering, he'll be impressing to all these other guys who are maybe experiencing it for the first time, and the importance of the occasion, and I fully expect him to be crucial again when it comes to Sunday.
Yeah, it's great to see him, you know, kicking into that role, because Scott Brown was there for so long, and you know, there was pressure on him coming into the captain's role. And I had David Potter on doing a little tribute to Bertie, and he spoke about, you know, that great midfield of Bertie and Bobby Moore, and he spoke about Paul McStay. But he said, you know, he puts Callum McGregor, you know, not quite in that mould yet, but he said he could be, because he said he's just outstanding. And, you know, David's seen, you know, even more midfielders than you at the club, Eddie. So, you know, great compliment from David.
It's a huge compliment for somebody with the knowledge of David. Anytime I listen to David, I'm always impressed with his football knowledge. It's incredible. And if he's saying that about Callum, then I'm not going to sit here and argue with him. You know, he's turned out to be, I always thought he'd be a good captain. You know, even, you know, he was always, for me, looked like the, you know, the natural successor to Bruni. I think he gets a bit of help. There are other players in that squad who are real leaders as well, notably the goalkeeper. Great organisers, you know, at the back. He seems to keep his defence. I think Carol Starfelt's really coming on to a game. Cameron Vickers looks decent and all that. So, you know, there are lots of leaders, I think, now in that squad, but Callum's head and shoulders above them all. And it's important, I think, for Celtic that you have that continuity. Here's a guy who's come through the ranks at the club, you know, product of the youth system. And maybe guys like Ralston take the lead for Callum as well. Had to go out on loan. It's very, very rare does a player go out on loan and then come back and be a big success at the club. And Callum is an example of that could happen. And hopefully, you know, people at Ralston and maybe others that's out on loan at the moment can take the lead for that and come back and kick on as well, you know.
Yeah, I chatted to Callum at one of the pressers a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, that when he went to Notts County, at Celtic, he had everything as a young player, you know, he had all the supports. But he said when he went to Notts County, he realised that there was players there, and, you know, the bonus was the difference between them paying their mortgage or not paying their mortgage. And, you know, he said he really had to grow up and it opened his eyes. And when he came back, I remember when he missed the goal in Germany against Borussia Mönchengladbach, I was cursing him that day, like, coming out of the stadium, because it could have been another win in Germany that got away, and I was cursing him. Yeah. I could never have imagined that night when we settled in for a point back we went back to Dusseldorf. But I remember, you know, I was talking about the game, and I could never have imagined he was going to have the career that he's had at the club and win the amount of trophies, and now he's in the driving seat as captain. But you mentioned another one, Tony Ralston. I think I've told this story before. We were going to a cup final. I can't remember which one it was. Tony was out on loan, and he was in, it must have been the Scottish Cup final, and he was in Dublin on a weekend with his mates, and he was on the same flight as us going back to Glasgow on the Sunday or Saturday morning, whatever it was. And I asked him, was he going to the game? And he didn't have a ticket. You know, he was still on Celtic's books, but he was on loan. He was the forgotten man, the most forgotten
Did you phone Hilly and sort him out then, did you?
Well, there was a few phone calls, but I think he ended up watching it with his mates. I think they had a good night on the Saturday night or the night before. But Eddie, like, now he's cemented a place for himself. He's in that squad. He's been outstanding. I'm just so delighted for him because, you know, the ups and downs he's had, you know, from he came into the team force. We all remember the Neymar game against Barcelona and that. And then he was out on loan and no manager really gave him a chance. And then Ange comes in. He's, you know, Ange hasn't a lot to play with at the start of the season. He gives him his chance. He grabs it with both hands and both feet. And then on Wednesday night in Dingwall, what a way to win a game, Eddie.
Oh, incredible. I was sitting a few minutes before it, you know, two rows to the back of the stand there with my head in my hands and starting to think, because my take on this is we need to stay on their coattails right up to January, and we need to win in January. And I was sitting there really, you know, turned to Jeanette and says, this is not happening. I don't see the goal coming. And I was getting more agitated and more angry as, you know, the time, the clock was ticking and ticking. And just a huge feeling, a sense of relief. And for me, it's one of the most vital last-minute goals we'll score, you know, and it could be so, so crucial. And it's great to see somebody like Ralston getting that. But for me, he's a great story, because if you remember, when Ralston came into the team, it was him and Tierney were going to be the two superstars, the right-back and the left-back, and the comparisons were always there. And I remember both of them, even when they were younger, that in the youth squads, and people used to talk about who was the best player amongst the two of them. And then obviously Kieran kicked on, you know, just so quickly and matured so quickly. And for me, became Kieran Taylor's a world class defender. There's no doubts about it. And you know, his rise was meteoric. You know, Anthony Ralston said to take a different route. He said to go out and loan a couple of times. He's came back in, probably got back into the squad by default. You know, the squad was in the bare bones at the start of this season, but he claimed that number two position, and it's his. It's his to lose now, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I know Juranovic was one of our big sort of marquee signings, if you like, and one of Angie's players, but that's Tony Ralston's position right now, and it's up to other players to try and come and take it off him, but he doesn't look like relinquishing it anytime soon, you know. He's putting in, he's defending well, he's getting up the park, I don't know about 5 or 6 goals he scored already this season, and you know, it's phenomenal, and it's a great story, and the great thing about it is he's clearly, you know, a Celtic kid, you know, he was brought up in the traditions of Celtic, he's a Celtic fan, and it's always important, despite, you know, having all these wonderful foreigners coming into the club and doing great things, it's, for me, it's really important that we have kids like that in our team. You need to have that link to our roots and our community and stuff like that, and you always need people like that in the dressing room, and I hope he's here for a long time, and I hope he continues to improve and perform the way he is, because for me, you kind of get enough players through your own youth academy and into your first team. It's just great to see.
Yeah, Annie, I didn't get a ticket for the game. I didn't get it in the ballot. But I only got back from Glasgow on Monday after Sunday's game, and I have to say I had a good night. My son was off with me and his mates, and I think I rolled back the years in the Brazen Head on Sunday evening, and I was probably struggling a bit Monday, and I was probably kind of happy then that I wasn't getting up at, you know, to get the fly on Wednesday and get the bus up. I was kind of happy I didn't get a ticket, and so I'm watching the game, and I hate watching games at home because last season just done me head in. I'm watching the game, and then I turn around and I said to Sam, I says, and I use this line, I says, I fucking hate watching games at home. I says, at least if you're there, you can feel, even if you lose, you can feel bad for a draw, you feel bad for going down the road. But I says, I'm going to go to bed now in bad form, because it was coming near the end of the game. We got the corner, and I hadn't even seen if it was a penalty claim or not, but I'm screaming penalty because, you know, it's just the emotions. But the camera goes into the corner, and John Paul Taylor's in the corner. He's not in the stand.
Seen the clip, yeah.
And I don't know what he's saying. I don't know what he's saying, but he's obviously encouraging him.
I texted JP and says, you have to take the credit for that goal, mate. I've seen, I mean, your encouragement sparked the whole thing, you know. So,
but it was brilliant, and I just wish the camera had went back to him because I leapt off the sofa and the dog done a run, and it was dancing around the sitting room. And I'm not a fan of Twitter already. I don't go on Twitter after games because of last season.
Yeah.
But I went on, and I went on Facebook, and I actually took about 50 screenshots of people's comments, and they were just absolutely, I read them all the next day. They were just amazing. Yeah. And one of them was a bloke that said, I've got COVID, and I've been, you know, laid down all week, he says, and I'm just after jumping up, he says, and I think I've thrown a Christmas tree out the window. something to those effects. It was absolutely brilliant.
I'm sure there was a few televisions going out the window for folks on the other side of the city, to be honest. I don't know about Christmas trees, but I'm sure there was a few tellies went out the window. And you know, it was bedlam. We were, as I just said, we were in the second back row, and that we stand behind the goal. And, you know, we're coming out against the stadium, and Jeanette says, probably quite lucky we were on the second back row, because I think had we been any nearer the pitch, we would have been on the pitch as well, you know. So, you know, I know there's been a bit of negative press about the celebrations, as you always give me negative press for everything, but, you know, it was just sheer exuberance and stuff like that. There was no matter. In fact, I looked at the pitch invasion, there was actually two young fellas, kids, and they came through the Ross County end of the ground in a sort of a stand opposite the dugouts, right out the middle, this halfway line, right, and they were involved in the melee as well, and then at the end of it, they legged it back and got back into their end of the ground. I don't know if there were a couple of young Celtic fans from up that way or what, but you know, it was it was just fantastic. You know, it was just the sheer joy, the magic of the moment. And it made the trip down the road a lot easier because, as I say, I was sitting there a few minutes before thinking, fucking 4-hour journey, you're not back at 2 in the morning and you're anticipating, are we going to win the league? How do we get back into this title race? And it just made the journey so much more enjoyable and so much easier and quicker, probably. With a couple of young fellas that were booked onto the bus, no members of their club in we seem to have lost them. They never came back in the bus, but their bags were there. And I was saying, how do I fucking get these bags back? And then eventually the young fella appeared about 20 minutes after everybody else. And what happened? He says, oh, I was on the pitch, he says. And then I dropped my phone, he says, but I run off and get back in. He said, I didn't realise I dropped my phone. He was back in the stand. And then I could see my phone almost in the 18-yard line. I was trying to work out a way how I was going to get back on the pitch to get it. And, but eventually he did. Apparently a steward gave him it back. And I have to say, I thought, you know, I thought the stewards and stuff like that up there had probably dealt with most of that fairly decently. I'm sure one or two people might have other stories to tell. But it, for me, it was all good. Spirited, it was in, you know, it was just sheer joy and the emotion of the occasion. It was absolutely magic. Yeah,
and from me saying, you know, before the game, I'm kind of glad I didn't go now. You know, good night's sleep, and you know, get over Sunday's game now, and I'll be ready to go for the cup final again. And I was saying, geez, I wish it wasn't that bus now coming down the road, and I would have been getting on a flight nearly straight away. Like, so I wouldn't. I would have been exhausted, Jesse, but. You know, that put me in mind of when Ado Baric saved that penalty against Moscow.
Definitely.
That
absolutely.
I had that kind of feeling, you know, that like, yeah. it was just amazing and just great to have it. But, and to see everyone, like, I think, you know, you're always going to get people criticizing fans going on the pitch, but I think that was like, you know, like, I don't because, It's just the moment. You know, you're in the moment, and if someone goes on the pitch and you're next to them, well, you're going over that fence.
You're
too,
in like, all of them. Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, can I interrupt for 2 minutes? One of your members has just come to the door to collect our cup final tickets, believe it or not. So
no problem,
give me two
mate.
Seconds.
No Dubs, problem.
We're good to go. These things never stop, you know.
Any time I take two. Eddie, just I know we're all on a high, and it was great celebrations, and there is a... You know, a certain togetherness between the players, the fans, and the manager at the moment. And I said it to Joe Hart at the press conference the other day. I said to him, you know, how he was enjoying it. You know, and he's loving it. And obviously he's in front of the fans and he's loving every minute of it. But we do have the whole Bernard Higgins thing hanging over us at Celtic Park. You know, with the silence at the games and. It's just one of the things, Eddie, that there hasn't been much dialogue. There hasn't been any comments from the club. It's still hanging over us. Have we heard anything, Eddie? Is there going to be talks? Or, you know, have they said, yeah, he's getting the job, or nay, he's not getting the job?
Well, they're absolutely nothing. And for me, that's the big problem. I mean, the people who have it in their gift to put this whole thing to bed, Michael Nicholson, et al., Ian Bankier, the people. See board. They could just bury this with the stroke of a pen. They could pick up the phone and say, let's organise a quick meeting, or, you know. And for some reason, they've chosen not to do that. Why have they chosen not to do that? I don't know, because you're right. There is a togetherness at the moment. I think the fans are galvanised for the first time in a long time. There's a real sense of unity. And this is starting to sow wee seeds again, a bit of disharmony and. You know, and people have clearly had opposing views in relation to, you know, the merits of a silent protest. And, you know, and I'm not going to get into that in any great deal. I've got my own views on that. But the thing is, you know, you either get involved in these things or you don't. If you don't agree with a silent protest, you can go to the stadium and sing your heart out. But the people who could just bury all this and really send out a clear message and keep that unity going and keep that level of support going, of the board, and for some reason have chosen to say absolutely nothing, and I really am bemused as to why. I mean, my take on the Higgins thing is I really believe that I can't see that he'll get this job at this stage of the game. I'd be amazed if he starts in that position. Whether he's been offered the position or no, I don't know, man. I understand that he has, but, you know, I'm no privy to any of that official information. So, but it just seems absolute madness that they've allowed this to fester and bubble away for so long, you know, on the back of a huge campaign where all the supporters groups for the first time in a long time are unified, you know, the statement goes out for them all. So you've got the Supporters Association, the Irish Association, the Affiliation, the Celtic Trust, the Green Brigade, the Boys. I'm not even sure if I've missed any, but they're all fairly unified in their opposition to this. I went to an association delegates meeting only 4 or 5 weeks ago, and this subject came up, and I was amazed at the unanimous support for the campaign to, you know, to oppose Bernard Higgins, even from, you know, some of the old timers, if you like, at the association, where they're expected to back the board on this one. So it cuts across the whole fan base. You know, you see people in the main stand that stand up if you hate Higgins and all, you know, and all the chants, and, you know, you've seen all the supporters club banners. So this campaign has been led by the supporters groups, but it's supported across the board. There's been an email campaign to the chief executive or the acting chief executive. Tons of people written to him. Not one have been afforded the courtesy of reply. Is this the start of his tenure as the chief executive? What is it he's doing? It leads to you. Who's actually calling the shots? Is it the absentee landlord? I don't know, you know, but what's the end game for the board here? Is it about them showing that, oh, we're not going to bow to fan pressure and we're just going to do about anything anyway? None of it's very good PR. None of it's very good for club supporter relations, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to find a way out of this, but it's up to them to find a way. It's not up to the fans. These protests will continue. They're not going to go away. You know, the silent protests might have been tried and we might move on to something else. But people are not going to get away. People are not going to just roll over and accept Bernard Higgins walking into this position. So there's going to need to be a solution. The only people who can come up with a solution are the people who are running my club. And I just can't believe that they haven't taken it upon themselves to sort this out soon, because, as you say, if I was running the club at the moment, I'd be wanting to really cash in on this feel-good factor at the moment. The links that have become between the squad and the fans, the manager's playing his role there, the players are getting involved, the fans are really backing them, the fans are unified, and we've got this, you know, bubbling away in the background. Let's bury it, put it to bed and move on. Let's make a real statement and let's say, look, we understand your concerns, and on this occasion we're going to move on, we're going to look at another candidate for the job, and sends out a great signal and keeps everybody on board, and then we're all marching in the one direction.
Yeah, it does, Eddie, and from negotiations for everything, there's always a back channel, Eddie, and there doesn't even seem to be a back channel for this one. You know, if they don't want to go public, you know, this is the way we're going to play it. Because, you know yourself, there's been negotiations between the associations and the trust before, and when I think back to the safe standing, you know, it's well known that it was the trust that put all that in place and pushed for that. But the club had said, look, it's going to go ahead, but we need to announce it, and, you know, or something to that effect, if you remember, Eddie. And the trust went, okay, because the most important thing was to get the safe standing section in. And that's there, yeah. And it's been a great success. So, yeah, I'm disappointed that there hasn't even been a back channel, Eddie. But when I have someone like you on, Eddie, who has great knowledge of these cup finals, I want to end them. You have to have a League Cup final story for me. Maybe not as good as your Scottish Cup final story from 1995, which you shared with us in your bye-bye tracksuit. But I'm sure you've got a League Cup story for us.
I have a couple of League Cup stories, but they were in the early years and they were misery. You know, I can remember standing, being 4-0 down in my first ever League Cup final with Partick Thistle, and my old man saying to us, don't worry, it's only 4-0. We'll turn this round in the second half. And he convinced me we were going to win the game. You were only playing Partick Thistle. It's, you know, and then Kenny O'Gleish scored for us to make it 4-1. And I'm thinking, okay, the comeback's on. And then by about 10 minutes, I sort of could feel his hand on the collar of my shirt and said, come on, we're going to aim the game finished, you know, and we get marched out. So that was my early memories of the League Cup. And then the most miserable day I ever had at a match in my life, probably, you know, irrespective of the score, was the 1974 League Cup final when we played Dundee and Gordon Wallace scored a goal for them. He beat us 1-0, and it was probably the smallest crowd I was ever in at Ibrox. It was the most awful day, standing in the terrace and behind the goal and in a monsoon almost, you know, get fucking soaked to the skin. And just absolutely drenched. No crowd there. I can't even remember why the crowd was so low. I don't know if it was down to the weather or there was maybe a transport strikes on or something like that. But I think Tommy Gemmell actually played for Dundee that day as well, you know. And I just remember getting home thinking, I'm never getting back to football. This is rubbish, you know. It's like, but for some reason, you know, I was probably at the next game and my love affair continued. So my early memories of the League Cup final were of misery. Changed a wee bit, as I say, in the 63 game, I think. And was that 75, 76? And when Dixie Dean scored the hat-trick. And Joe Harper also scored the hat-trick in that game for Hibs as well. There's not many players scored a hat-trick in a cup final and don't get a winner's medal. So that must have been a sore one for wee Harper. But that was a you know, we talk about, you know, thinking games like the Dundee game put you off. You then go to a match like that as a kid and you think, yeah, this is what football's all about. You know, it's just brilliant, you know. And then we never won it again until, what, 82? 82, and when we beat the Huns 2-1, when like Charlie Nicholas and McLeod put us 2-0. Again, another soaking, pissing in wet day. We beat them 2-1. That was a fantastic... That was the first one I could remember when we could go to the pub after the game because there was such a gap and I was only a kid at previous games. So I remember getting into the pub in Shettleston that night and having a right good sing-song and a few pints. So, all great memories. But I'm much, for some reason, my memories around the Scottish Cup are much fonder than they are in the League Cup. So I'm hoping there's still more memories to come. Maybe this Sunday will give me a really magical moment for the League Cup, but
Well, hopefully it'll be. There won't be sunshine in Leith, and there'll be celebrations in Glasgow on Sunday, and I'll be actually heading back up the road to Edinburgh to get a flight home on Sunday evening, so maybe I could be. Hopefully, I'll be celebrating a Celtic win in Edinburgh.
Fair enough. You know, I'm just heading to Edinburgh Airport now to pick a young fella up, so I might stick a Celtic tracksuit on just to let them know that. Get him a wee reminder.
Well, listen, Eddie, you know me. I don't really have a connection with the big man upstairs, but I know that your young lad has. So get him to say a few prayers for Sunday, will you? And also pray that I get me antigen result test back and that I'm good to go, because there's so much hassle.
I'll pray for the test results are good, because I think the big man upstairs might have some influence over all of that. But as far as the football goes, and Ange we trust. Brilliant. He's a big man as far as we go at the moment.
Folks, more than 90 minutes, issue 118 is now sold out, so I thank everyone for buying that. You'll probably still be able to pick up a copy in Coatbridge in the candy store, Calton Books in Glasgow, or Station Books in London. And you can also buy the digital edition online by visiting CelticFanzine.com. Eddie, it's been a pleasure to chat. Hopefully we get you back on again. Hopefully we win Sunday. Good celebrations. I'll be in Morphy's pre-match for Celtic AM from 12 till 2. There's plenty of Celtic chat and music, so if anyone's about the Merchant City, pop in and see us. Don't forget to visit the website, CelticFanzine.com, for news, articles, podcasts, Celtic Fanzine TV, Celtic AM, news on our upcoming events and our online shop. Thanks for listening, thanks for reading, and thanks for watching. And please, thank you for your continued support. And Eddie, I'll leave the last word to you.
Just hopefully, you know, as I say, Christmas, the cup finals that lead up to Christmas are always great. I hope everybody has a fantastic day on Sunday. I hope they're certainly going to be green and white ribbons on the cup. I hope they're going to be our green and white ribbons. I hope everybody has a fantastic day, and hope all your listeners and all the Celtic supporters out there have a fantastic Christmas. God bless every one of them.
Hail, hail, Eddie.
Cheers, Andrew.
Hey, Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.